Well, welcome, everyone, to this bi-monthly conflict-free leadership call hosted by the National Physicians Alliance as part of its Unbranded Doctor Project, which takes place under the Partnership to Advance Conflict-Free Medical Education Grant, affectionately known as PACME. I'm going to encourage folks on the call, because we're expecting quite a few, to mute your lines. You can hit *6 to do that, and then when it's time for Q&A, you can hit *6 to unmute. Just know there's like a second of lag time between it happening if you're getting ready to speak. I'm Rachel DeGolia, Executive Director of the Universal Healthcare Action Network and Board Member of the National Physicians Alliance, and I'll be the facilitator for this call. We have physicians, faculty, and students from at least the following states on the call. This was, I think, as of yesterday, from Connecticut, D.C., Florida, Massachusetts, Maryland, Maine, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Washington. And I'm sure a few others may have joined us from other states as well since the registration list yesterday. So let me just provide a little bit of background on the PACME project, under whose auspices this call is taking place tonight. The grant is the result of a state attorney general settlement regarding the inappropriate marketing of the drug Neurontin. Partners for the grant, in addition to the National Physicians Alliance, are the American Medical Student Association, Community Catalyst, and the Pew Charitable Trust. And we expect staff for all these organizations to be on the call tonight. The goal of this project is to reduce conflicts of interest created by the pharmaceutical industry in the medical profession and medical research. The partners on this grant promote a number of approaches to raise awareness of the issue and to build leadership in the medical profession to eventually eliminate some, if not all, conflicts. For more information about the National Physicians Alliance and this project, you can visit the NPA Unbranded Doctor website at npalliance.org/conflict-free. All right. So the topic for tonight's call is teaching tools to counter pharma marketing tactics. And both our speakers have some fascinating new research and information about resources and research to share with us tonight. I'm going to introduce our speakers right now. I'm going to ask Ann to say a few, Ann Wollison, to say a few words about the other programs, activities of the project, and then we will go ahead and have our speakers speak. Just so you know what the format is, they're each going to speak for about 15 minutes. After our first speaker, which will be Dr. Few Berman, I'll take a couple questions just for her, and then we'll go on and hear from Dr. Doris Peter. We'll take a couple questions for her, and then we'll throw it up open for Q&A for everybody, and we will end promptly on the hour. So our speakers tonight, and we're very glad to have them with us, are Adrian Few Berman, who is the director of Farmed Out, a project of the Georgetown University Medical Center to encourage evidence-based prescribing. Dr. Few Berman is also associate professor in the Department of Pharmacology and Physiology and in the Department of Family Medicine at Georgetown University Medical Center. Doris Peter, Ph.D., is associate director of the Health Ratings Center and principal investigator for the Best Buy Drugs Project at Consumer Reports. She will share with us information about evidence-based resources available from the project free of charge for your practice and your patients. So we kind of decided in determining the order in which our two speakers will speak tonight is that we'll start with Dr. Few Berman, who will talk about what we are learning about the kinds and extent of biased information being promoted by the pharmaceutical industry. And then we'll move on to Dr. Peter, who will focus more and guide us in understanding where medical providers and patients can go to get unbiased information on drugs. So given the number of people on the call tonight, we would like to invite all of you, if you haven't muted your line already, to hit *6 to do that. Then we can hear better. and you can hit star 6 again to speak. And we invite you to email your questions as they occur to you to Ann Wollison, MPA's Education Director, at ann.wollison, W-O-L-O-S-O-N, at npalliance.net. And we'll make sure that your questions are either asked during the call or you receive a response following the call if we run out of time. So, again, that email is ann.wollison at npalliance.net. All right, so before we move on to hear from our speakers, I'd like to ask Ann, MPA's Education Director, to provide a brief update on the conflict-free project and upcoming activities. Ann?
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Rachel. That's great. And I'm only going to take a minute because I'm so excited to have both Doris and Adrian with us tonight, so I don't want to take up too much of their time. I've worked with them for years, and they are fantastic. So thank you both for joining us tonight, and thank you to everybody who's on the call to learn about these resources. Just really quickly, I want to remind people that the Partnership to Advance Conflict-Free Medical Education has helped to expand the unbranded doctor work that the National Physicians Alliance has been involved in for a couple of years now. And I invite you to visit the National Physician website, National Physician Alliance website, to look at some of the resources that we have put together as a result of this project over the course of the last year and a half. There are several calls. This is the eighth of a series of bi-monthly calls, leadership development calls. All of these calls are archived on our website, as well as several National Grand Rounds events that you can also receive CMEs for. So I just want to direct you to our website. Probably the best place to go to would be npalliance.org/conflict-free. Let me say that one more time. npalliance.org/conflict-free. And all those resources are there for you, the archived National Grand Rounds and the bi-monthly leadership development calls, spectacular speakers with an array of issues that we talk to that are related to evidence-based prescribing and conflict-free medical education. I won't go on except for just to mention, and maybe Adrian will say something about this if time allows, but she is the executive director of Farmed Out, and they're having their fourth annual conference on June 6th and 7th at Georgetown University. The conferences are great. Great, excellent speakers. The title of this year's conference is Medical Behavior in a Commercial World, Who is Responsible? And I hope she has a minute to talk a little bit more about that. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you again for joining us. And Adrian, I'll give you the floor.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ann and Rachel and National Physicians Alliance, a really fabulous organization. I wanted to tell people a little bit about Farmed Out, and thanks so much for mentioning the conference. We were also started with a grant from the Attorney General Consumer and Prescriber Grant Program in 2006, but we've actually been supported by individual donations and mainly individual donations, a little bit of help from my school since 2008. And what really makes my project, I think really has added so much to my project is that we have a lot of industry insiders, former and current industry insiders who work with us, and we use information from them to create educational modules on pharmaceutical, and we're moving into medical device industry influence as well. So we promote rational prescribing, we encourage evidence-based medicine, and we've got a lot of tools on our website that I also wanted to talk to people about. So let's see, we have our newest entry, which we're extremely proud of, is our drug ads exercise. So anybody who's teaching medical students or teaching residents or teaching themselves, these are actually perfectly wonderful exercises for anybody to look at. Would really like our drug ad exercise series. And if anybody who's giving lectures, these are freely downloadable slideshows. They're in three parts, and we've got an informational sheet that also has learning objectives on it. So if you're giving a talk, you don't even have to come up with a learning objective. So it's in three parts. The first part is on drug advertising tactics, and it looks at pharmaceutical advertising in medical journals, indirect drug marketing. It goes over the deceptive use of figures using actual ads to do that, and what are misleading claims, and there's a section on disease mongering too. One of the things that's also helpful about this this slideshow is that it has a section on comparing relative and absolute risk and how to distinguish between them. We also have that section separately in a 10-slide slideshow called Fast Stats, just for somebody who wants a quick review that's really easy to understand about relative and absolute risk and also number needed to treat. So anyway, our first drug ad exercise is on drug advertising tactic. It's great basics. And also you can just download individual slides as well if you just want to throw some drug ads and explanatory information into a presentation. And then we have a slideshow on the life cycle of a drug that looks at the marketing timeline. So this is a really wonderful slideshow that covers pre-launch promotion, launch promotion, and active marketing of a drug, but also patent extension strategies. So it explains about what me-too drugs are how the different evergreening tactics that a company uses in terms of releasing new formulations, releasing enantiomers, renaming drugs, et cetera. So anyway, we really love this slideshow. We've got many other resources on the site. Our classic Why Lunch Matters is also a great slideshow on pharmaceutical marketing. We've done many grand rounds on this, and it's actually the only educational module that has been proven to change physicians' attitudes and medical students' attitudes about their own susceptibility to pharmaceutical marketing. So while there have been other educational modules that have convinced physicians that their colleagues could be affected by marketing, it's much harder to convince people that they themselves can be affected by marketing. And Why Lunch Matters has been shown to do that. It's a really effective slideshow, and again, just downloadable by everyone. We've also got six videos that have industry insiders, including one featuring a drug rep who sold Zyprexa, who now has just graduated from medical school. We have several brochures, including a brochure called Don't Be Duped, which goes over some tactics that sales reps use. We also have materials for patients, including a very popular fact sheet on generic drugs and why generic drugs are just as good as branded drugs. We've been finding this tactic is really used more for physicians, but companies and drug reps have been telling physicians that generic drugs are 20% weaker than branded drugs. It seems to be a really, really prevalent a myth, and it is totally a myth that the standards between generic drugs and branded drugs are actually exactly the same as batch-to-batch variability between branded drugs. And then we also just have some fun things on the site, too, including Drug Ad Bingo, which is a little game you can play with medical students if you have a lot of drug ads from medical journals, for example, and a sort of tongue-in-cheek but actually very useful sandwich guide. So one of our We sometimes give out farmed-out lunch boxes that have BYOL written on them for bring your own lunch to medical students, because we're trying to encourage them not to eat drug rep lunches. And one of my colleagues, Tom Sherman, who is really obsessed with sandwiches, wrote a little recipe guide it's our BYOL sandwich guide. And that's also available on the site. In fact, tuna salad is one of the most searched for terms that by which people get farmed out.
I'm getting hungry.
I was confused about that for a while. I don't understand why. What is this tuna salad search? But yeah, apparently it's a really good recipe. And I'm really happy that Ann mentioned our conference coming up because we're really excited about this. And NPA members, importantly, get a large discount. So it's only $150 to come to both days, and that includes two lunches, which are sandwiches from the French Embassy. They're extremely good. two breakfasts and a reception, plus 9.5 CME credit. So, there, see, I'm such a good marketer. I haven't even actually mentioned the content, but I've talked about the food first. And homemade cookies. But it is called Medical Behavior in a Commercial World, Who's Responsible, and Marcia Angel will be speaking. And we actually have a whole half of a day in which we're going to discuss the role of medical journals. So Elizabeth Loader from the British Medical Journal will be there. Ginny Barber, who's the editor-in-chief of Public Library of Science Medicine, and Marcia Angel will all be on a panel. And we also have two ghostwriters who've written for industry. One who has never spoken in public before will be talking about how he sold low testosterone syndrome to both physicians and consumers. So it'll be really interesting to see what the interaction is with the editors and the ghostwriters, and I think that's going to be a really fabulous discussion. We've divided the conference into various parts on Thursday, responsibility of the practitioner, and Joel Lection from York University, very well known in this area, is speaking. We're also going to talk about opioid overuse. We'll be discussing medical devices with Diana Zuckerman, National Research Center for Women and Families, and Charlie Ornstein from ProPublica will be talking about the Physician Payment Sunshine Act and sort of lessons from ProPublica. We'll be talking about the responsibility of academic medical centers. Charlie Bennett from University of South Carolina will be talking about conflicts of interest in basic science research, which is sort of a black box. Nobody really knows about these issues. And Danny Carlott from Pew, a Prescription Project, will be talking about reforming the culture of academic medicine. Carl Elliott from University of Minnesota, author of White Coat, Black Hat, will talk about sponsored research in academic medical centers as well. So then on Friday, we've got our ghostwriters and medical journal editors. And then in the afternoon, we're actually revealing a former pharmaceutical executive from a top five pharmaceutical company will be talking about ethics in pharma, and that'll be really the afternoon. We'll be several speakers talking about business ethics and what pharmaceutical companies' responsibilities are. So it's going to be really exciting. We have a lot of people registered already. We have more than 70 people registered already for the conference. So please sign up, and MPA members just sign up at the $150 rate. So, and you know, we do a lot of things, but we're mainly focusing on the influence of industry. We do have some resources on unbiased information on drugs on our site, and that certainly includes the Best Buy drugs project. So it's really, there are sources of unbiased information. We've got lists on our site, and Best Buys is great. And Doris, you're on.
All right.
Great. Thank you. Thanks very much. Did you want to take any questions first, or just go right to me, or?
Well, yeah, I think that's what my thought was, that it might be helpful for people who've had questions have occurred to them as Adrian has been speaking. Do you have some that have been emailed to you yet, Anne?
Yeah, I have two so far.
Okay, let's take a couple questions, and then we'll go to Doris.
Okay, and just to remind people, if you do want to send me some questions later on, my email address is ann.wolosson@npalliance.net. So let me see here. So the first one is, Adrian, do you know anything about the industry's effort to preserve patents and how that plays into how brand name drugs are marketed to physicians?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that industry does. So one is to sequentially release things in controlled release, extended release, and sustained release preparations, because you can get a patent extension on those things. Sometimes industry will just rename a drug. So Theraphem and Prozac are the same thing. Revatio and Viagra are the same thing. They're, Butrin and Buspar, Bupropion are the same thing. So there, you can rename a drug, get a new indication, and even if the first drug is available generically, a renamed drug will still be on patent and cannot be filled generically, even if it's exactly the same drug in the same dose. So there's many different ways that products can be that patents can be extended on products. And of course, there are many drugs that differ only in minor molecular ways that don't make a difference as well. So these are just tricks that cost our patients money, and it's really important to be aware of these different tactics.
Okay.
You got another one there, Ann?
Yeah. Do you believe patient assistance programs are used to market more expensive drugs, and how can patients instead be encouraged to seek less expensive therapeutic equivalents?
Yeah, copays, vouchers, these are samples, are all marketing tactics. And the patient assistance programs, the one thing industry fears more than anything is being regulated from the outside. So when enough public attention is paid to something, they'll say, oh, we'll self-regulate. Oh, if they're patients who can't afford our drugs, we'll give it to them. But in fact, there is very few patients who are actually eligible for these programs, and of course they're only available for specific expensive drugs. But most of the people who actually try and get drugs through patient assistance programs actually aren't able to get them aren't actually eligible. So the eligibility criteria can be strict. But really, this is an effort to prevent any external regulation of industry. So it's really important to try and educate patients about generic drugs. I mean, one of the things that we try and tell people is that generic drugs as a group are safer than branded drugs as a group, simply because we know more about them. That since a drug has been on the market at least 7 to 10 years in order to be eligible to become a generic drug, we just have more information about it. We don't know everything about adverse effects of any drug when it first comes on the market, because it's only been tested in a limited population. And if there's an adverse effect that occurs, say, 1 in 10,000 times, you'd need to have a clinical trial with 30,000 people in it to pick that up before a drug is marketed. Well, that's not happening. You know, we test a drug in healthy people, and then once it's on the market, we use it in elders, we use it in children, we use it in people with multiple comorbidities or who are on multiple other drugs, and so the adverse effects come out over a number of years. So I'm thinking if we rename generic drugs classic drugs, maybe we could sell them better to consumers.
Yeah, we in the past we've been to events where generics are referred to by the industry as older, crappier drugs. And we whenever we talk about generics or therapeutic equivalents, we talk about tried and true drugs. I like the classic terminology too. That's great.
Language matters, doesn't it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So let's ask Dr. Doris Peter now to speak. And I'll remind people she is with Consumer Reports, where she is Associate Director of the Health Rating Center and Principal Investigator for the Best Buy Drugs Project. Doris?
Thanks very much, and thanks for the opportunity to talk today. And unfortunately, I'm not one of the people at Consumer Reports that gets to test the cars at the racetrack. That's what I'd really like to do. But we get to watch people test the cars. But I don't test the toasters either, but I get to watch them. And lately, though, our health folks have been testing those standing treadmill desks. So those are pretty cool, where you can do your work and walk at a treadmill at the same time. So there's an intersection between our product testing and the health world. So I work in the division of Consumer Reports that focuses on health services and products like drugs. Other parts of our company work on things like blood glucose monitors and treadmills, exercise equipment, and things like that. And our work is a little bit different to that of typical product testing in that we can't, in most cases, actually bring products into our testing labs and test them in our facility at Yonkers. And if anyone lives nearby our area, I welcome you to come by and actually contact me, and I can give you a tour of the facility. It's a lot of fun. But with health services type work, we have to rely on data sources, external data sources, and we have to make sure they're reliable and trustworthy. And that's what we do in the area of Best Buy drugs. We find reliable sources of unbiased information. So those are our systematic reviews done by trusted sources. They could include ARC, various EPCs, the evidence-based practice centers around the country, or the Drug Effectiveness Review Project out of Oregon. So we take these large, huge projects large publications. The last one I looked at was 650 pages long, and we put that into a form that consumers can understand. We translate that into sort of advice that consumers can use to make better decisions, to understand their prescription drug options, and we add cost information too, because for the most part, in many cases, the government, for example, won't add cost information or talk about overuse or anything like that. So we add all of that information into reports that we provide to consumers and help them understand their choices. So that's overall what our project does. We do, just to let you know about our funding also comes from the same source that's been brought up before, a consumer prescriber grant program, and has also been funded in the past by the National Library of Medicine and the Albert Engelberg Foundation. So our project started in 2004. And it started in large part because there wasn't really a good source for consumers of any kind of information other than drug advertising, magazine advertising, all the direct-to-consumer advertising that was out there. And then also, there weren't when patients went to their doctor, they didn't necessarily learn about all the different options that they might have. So in response to that environment, this project, Best Buy Drugs, was launched. And so I mentioned before that we translate these scientific studies, and what we do is we work together with the person who's done the systematic review. So we work directly with the author to help create a first draft of this material so that basically they know all the gory details of the comparisons that have been done in a particular class of drugs or a condition or maybe just one type of drug. And so they work with us to create these great consumer versions, and we also test them with consumers, make sure that they're understandable, make sure we're addressing their concerns, and then we provide them at no cost to everybody. They're available, to you to be able to work with your patients or for patients to reach on their own. And our website, if you want to take a look at it, is www.crbestbydrugs.org. And I can repeat that, or maybe, I don't know if there's an email that's going to go out. We can send that information. And right now we...
We'll have written notes on, as well as the audio posted on the website.
Okay, that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So what our goal is of these publications and these recommendations for consumers, there's several goals. One is to make sure that they understand their prescription drug options. When we interview patients or we survey them, we find that for the most part they don't understand that there is more than one option. We also find they're not aware of side effects, which is probably not surprising. Some common side effects consumers will not be aware of, and cost is another thing they're not aware of. So these are all things that we try to help consumers understand. And then through our survey work that we've done with our own readers, but also with nationally representative samples, we know that this is what consumers are looking for. So, for example, recently we did a study for the Institute of Medicine, and we asked consumers what they want to know when they're visiting the physician's office or any healthcare provider. And they, among their top requests were that they wanted to know about risks, they wanted to be offered options, and they wanted to know about costs. So these are the things we try to address, knowing that consumers are looking for this. So our materials can help support that dialogue with the physician. We've actually even studied our content in its effects on consumers to see, you know, what consumers are really doing with this material and what it could, what behavior change and what are consumers reporting. So with in one of our studies, in a survey report we did, we found that consumers that had used our material were reporting that they were having conversations with their doctor about that information and that they were switching in some cases from more expensive drugs to less expensive drugs, or they were switching drugs that had fewer side effects for them or were more effective. So we're able to show that in some cases this is really having an effect on the consumer behavior. We also did a claim study with partnering with an insurer, and we found that consumers that received our information were less likely to have a prescription for a particular drug. This was in the case of proton pump inhibitors than consumers that did, or patients that did not get access to our information. That was a controlled study. So we know that these that our material can actually have an important effect downstream when we measure that. A couple other interesting things we've done recently. We've done some studies, or we've done a tracking poll over the number of years that tracks consumers' behaviors and consumers' perceptions of prescription drugs, of generic drugs, trying to understand their concerns, their biases, their behaviors with respect to things that change over time, like the economy, for example, or in response to advertising. We ask about direct-to-consumer advertising. So in our most recent recent poll that we did in 2012, we really found the economy was having a severe effect on people. There was an increase in 13 percentage points from the previous year on the effect that the economy was having on reducing the ability for people to take their drugs. So people reported that the economy had an effect on them. And this year, or in 2012, 84% of uninsured Americans under 65 said that they took an action in order to pay for their medications, or 59% of Americans under 65 said this. And they did things like spent less on groceries, spent less on their family, used their credit card, postponed paying bills. So the economy is really, you know, really having an effect on people in terms of their ability to pay for their medications, and of course that's going to affect their adherence. They also report that they don't have the conversations that they want to about adverse effects with their providers, and also very few patients, not surprisingly, find out about cost during their visit. So these are things we track over time in these studies. And then very recently, and some of you might have seen it, was pretty high profile. We had a story on CNN, and a couple of the big newspapers picked it up. But we did a study of costs of newly generic drugs such as pioglitazone, escitalopram, atorvastatin. These are drugs that have recently gone generic in the past year or so. And we did some phone calls. We called 200 pharmacies across the country, and we found a huge variation in prices. When you combine the five drugs that we studied, there was a $750 difference between the lowest and the highest price pharmacy chain. And we found, in general, Costco was the least expensive. The market basket of drugs of these five drugs was $167 for a 30-day supply versus CVS, which was $916 for those same drugs. And I think some doctors already had that feeling that CVS was very expensive, but there was such a wide range of prices was quite shocking. So it just points out that, you know, people have to shop around and ask questions, and really you can really shop around and find the best price. But many consumers, and actually we were surprised at such a big difference. So just to go back to the resources that we have available, I mentioned the website crbestbuydrugs.org. There we cover about 29 different conditions. We cover mostly chronic conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol. We have reports that are posted there that are available for free. There are web versions of the reports. There are PDF versions. Some of them are what we call the long versions, which can be as long as 26 pages long. Believe it or not, when we test these with patients, they like the long version the best. When we tested shorter versions and digests and compilations or whatever, they wanted the long reports. They wanted all the gory details. And these reports have a lot of comparative charts. They do comparisons of advantages and disadvantages of drugs, looking at their adverse effects, cost, convenience of taking the medication and such things like that. They also, offer information about the outcomes that were studied and, what the outcomes really were compared to placebo. So it's surprising to people to see, for example, with the sleep drugs that they're, on average, you fall asleep something like 15 minutes earlier than if you don't take the drug. So consumers are, our patients are really surprised to see that, and we try to emphasize those differences in these charts that we provide to people. So these long reports are there. We have short digests that are easier to read in English and in Spanish, and we have videos as well. So there are lots of different tools that patients can use or doctors can use with their patients. And I hope that if you look at these materials, I hope they do what we're trying to get them to do, which is to have a dialogue. We're not trying to interfere with a relationship with a provider and the patient. We always refer back to having that discussion, like know what your options are so you can have that discussion. And in our testing of our materials, that's what people told us. They said, they came back to us and said, hey, now I understand what my doctor's been saying all along. Now I can really have a conversation. One woman said, I never knew what HbA1c was, and, she had diabetes for a number of years. And so just seeing these aha moments and having consumers say they were now empowered to have a good discussion with the doctor, that was, very rewarding for us to hear. And we hope, again, that these materials are doing that for you. So I will leave it at that and ask if there are any questions. I'm happy to direct people to our information or take, any emails that come through. If you have questions, email me directly if your questions don't get answered tonight.
All right. Okay. And I meant to ask, do you want to give us your email address, Doris?
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty easy. It's D, as in mm-hmm. dog, Peter, like as in Peter Rabbit, @ consumer.org.
All right, great. So do we have a couple questions for Dr. Peter, Ann?
Yeah, I do have a couple, but I have a question or a request, and that is, would you mind just talking about the AARP drug finding tool, which uses consumer
information? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. So we partner with a number of groups to disseminate our content in different ways to different people. And one of the things that we did is partner with AARP, and they took our database of drug recommendations of Best Buy, what we call Best Buys, and they created a tool on the AARP website called the Drug Savings Tool. And that's available for free to the public. Anybody can go in there, and you can enter a drug name, and it will make recommendations about what the Best Buy options would be for you. So if you put in, for example, branded Lipitor, of course, you'd get generic Lipitor, you'd get Simvastatin, things like that, and it will show you the retail prices that we have for them, and also will then link you to all the detailed reports that I just described here, the different formats, long and short, and et cetera, through that tool as well. So you can get at that information that way or by going to our site, either way it works.
Yeah. And it's a great tool. It's very user-friendly. I used it a couple months ago with somebody who contacted me personally about something. I can't remember what the drug was, but she did just as you said, plugged in what she was prescribed, mm-hmm. what she couldn't afford, saw the options, went back
right.
to her doctor who said, sure, you can use these other drugs. And as it turns out, something that she was going to have to pay $230 a month for ended up costing like $28 a month. So she thought
right,
she'd
right.
won the lottery. She was very excited.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And one of the other things that the charts that come from that show those prices and that also are on our website emphasize are the low-cost generic programs. And I think many aren't aware of those programs that are out there, and most retailers have them, and many generic drugs can be available at really low cost, $4 for 1 month or $10 for 3 months. So it's always worth checking those too, and we indicate those on our charts. And
right.
I forgot to mention the drug savings tool is also in Spanish as well, so that's another thing to consider.
So I do have a couple questions also. One is, do you know what role coupons play in steering patients to more expensive medicine, and how can patients be encouraged from using coupons?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. We've been
traffic.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting problem. And I was going to bring that up if I was allowed to ask a question of Adrian, because we debated that. And the one time that we did recommend coupons was when Lipitor just went generic, I think. And the branded Lipitor was extremely inexpensive if you used a coupon. And for the first time, we actually said, okay, look, we're giving up. This is the best deal, you know, because we feel like as a Consumer Reports, we have to recommend, you know, best deals when they're just outrageous, and that people who are already taking branded Lipitor were already on the brand, and we didn't feel like that was going to be a big, you know, issue for them. They're not switching from a generic to a brand. But in general, we are also, you know, skeptical about the use of coupons and keeping people on the branded drugs and perpetrating the role of the brand. And so, you know, we haven't done a detailed economic analysis of it, but that's something we're looking into more closely now.
Coupons are always to increase loyalty or to keep loyalty to a branded drug. They're generally for the most expensive drugs. That was a tactic by the makers of Lipitor to keep customers after it went generic, but
they abandoned it for consumers. Yeah, they abandoned it though, I guess, because either it wasn't effective at keeping enough customers, and also as the time goes on, the generic's just going to be so much less expensive that, you know, it's, I don't know, I guess they just felt like it wasn't worth it in the end. But yeah, we're not in favor of that, or of course of samples or anything that promotes the brand.
Mm-hmm. Another question for Doris. How often are your materials updated?
Our materials are updated when there's sufficient new evidence for the EPC to do a new evidence review. That's in general how we focus on it. Although we'll do price updates or add or remove drugs that either have been added to the market or removed from the market, or add important safety information. But the large systematic reviews, which take an enormous amount of time, are usually not done until there's something significant to change the marketplace or change what people should do. So if another Me Too drug comes on the market, that's not going to be enough for the EPCs to do another systematic review. So sometimes we are limited by that, though. If the systematic reviews are outdated, then we don't have the basis of a translation. So that can happen sometimes.
I have a question for Adrian, if you were finished.
Yeah, it's fine.
Does Farmed Out ever present or host a booth at medical society conferences? And if so, how are you received?
No, we can't actually afford to have booths. You know, as I said, we're supported only by individual donations, so we can't afford that. But we do a lot of grand rounds and just a lot of talks at medical conferences and at academic medical institutions and community hospitals, et cetera. And we've been doing this now for about 7 years, and I have to say I've never actually hit a hostile audience, and I think it's because we expose what industry says about physicians behind their back, and we show them graphics from industry literature, et cetera, and nobody likes feeling tricked. So while our talks may make people upset at industry, they, in general, have not made them upset at us, except when there's some people, sometimes there's people who work for industry in the audience or have worked for industry, and sometimes they get upset, but we've actually received really a great reception.
Hmm. Got
another one there, Anne? Let me just announce the email address one more time for questions, ann.wollison@npalliance.org. .net, right?
How about questions over the phone?
Oh, sure.
Sometimes
it works. It depends how many people we have and who want to ask it at the same time, but go right ahead.
Okay. This is Steve Smith from both NPA and Community Catalyst. Love your presentations. Adrian, this is mainly for you. And I was thinking about this presentation tonight, this afternoon in the clinic, and I had a patient come in who had an anxiety disorder. He's a new patient to me. And when we got through, he said, well, could you renew my prescription for Neurontin? It really helps my anxiety. And, you know, Neurontin is what's funding this PACME project. But despite hundreds of millions of dollars in fines, you know, what we see is that the tail, the economic tail of those illegal, off-label, promotions of the drug, you know, lasts decades, if not longer. So the company is still reaping, a financial benefit, from its illegal activities. And I wonder, you know, are we the David fighting the Goliath? It just seems like, you know, despite these kinds of fines, it's just the cost of doing business to the pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, what more can we do?
Oh yeah, that's really. I was just thinking. I took someone I don't actually know that well, but who was prescribed Neurontin for an off-label use, and I took the bottle of pills and I threw it in the trash, and I later realized that was probably a really inappropriate thing to do with someone I didn't know very well. But you're right that misinformation and. Lasts forever, it seems, and the trouble with indirect marketing and marketing that comes through the mouths of key opinion leaders and through ghostwritten articles in the medical literature and that taint almost every source of information that we have is that after a while, even the people who aren't being paid by industry are parroting marketing messages without knowing that they're parroting marketing messages and, you know, so people believe that Neurontin is good for anxiety and a lot of other things that it was that it was never approved for, and continue to use it. So, yeah, that is a really terrible problem. But actually, I feel very optimistic because we actually have made a big difference. You know, 1 out of 5 physicians don't see drug reps. Academic medical centers have really made major strides towards actually having policies about their faculty and policies about industry interactions with medical students, largely because of really great efforts on the American Medical Student Association's them, and then also with Prescription Project, MPA, Prescription Project, Farmed Out, you know, all of these organizations have really done a lot, and I think that awareness has really gotten quite a bit higher. So we've got a long way to go, and, you know, I think the other point about what you said is that when these embarrassing stories come out in litigation, you know, now we've got Novartis, but there's many, it seems like every few months there's another big scandal with drug companies, $3,000 meals and things like that. That what drug companies always say is, oh, those are the bad old days. No one does that now. And, of course, information from litigation is always old because it takes so long for a case to come to closure. But they are actually doing the same tactics. They might change them somewhat, but they are still affecting continuing medical education. They're affecting social media. They're affecting formularies. They're affecting compendia. They're still trying to affect every source of information that they can, and we just have to stay vigilant. So, sorry for ranting.
You're entitled. All right. Do you have another one for us, Anne?
Yep. Unless there's somebody on the phone who wants to dive in at the moment. Doris, you had mentioned something about some research you did, a CNN story about generic drugs that had gone generic and the price differences at different pharmacies. And the question is that a published study or can it be found on the Consumer Reports website?
Yep, that's published. We published it in Consumer Reports magazine, and you can find it also for free on the Consumer Reports website. But if you just type into Google Consumer Reports drug prices, you'll find a whole bunch of hits on it, on people have reported on it and the original story. So it's pretty easy to find.
Okay, and then,
all right.
Hold on a second. I just have to go through my emails here. There was this. This isn't really directed at either of you. So whoever would like to take a stab at it, how can medical schools promote these resources to students to counter the industry's presence at medical schools?
Well, I mean, I think their teachers bring up these sources of information, and teachers are in a good position to make medical students look at some of these things as part of an assignment would be really great. But while we're on that subject, I think it's worth mentioning that the most popular drug information source is Epocrates. I don't know any medical students who don't use Epocrates, and many, many physicians use it as well. But every time you look something up on Epocrates, that information goes straight back to industry. The reason it's free is that it's funded by industry, and they're collecting information on every drug that you look up. So, and
yes,
it's worth saying that to medical students, and it's also worth working with medical school administrations to use drug information software that they may actually have to pay for, but that isn't just a marketing opportunity for industry.
And then I have one more question, and it's, again, not really directed to either of you, but
this is Becky Martin. If I could interrupt just for a second before you move on there. I'm the NPA project manager who provides some staff support here to our PACME project, and just to follow up on that last question, any medical students that are interested in getting involved in more of this work, we would love to connect with you, and you could please email Anne at the email address that she's been that's been relayed here during this call, and we would be happy to connect with you directly and see what kind of local events we might be able to support and help you put together there in your schools.
That's really right. Helpful. Yep, that's great. The effect of the Affordable Care Act and the ability to access evidence-based prescription drugs, do either of you know how prescription drugs and formularies will be established through the ACA?
Ooh, I don't know.
No, I'm sorry. I don't know the details either. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks. Get back to that. This is Ann, and my understanding is that, and I haven't looked at the law in a while, but I believe that they have to offer two drugs in each class, each of the plans do, but perhaps that could be a topic of a future call from somebody who really has some expertise in that area. And I don't have any other calls, and I don't know if either of you have anything that you want to say before we finish. Thank you very much. It's great information, and I agree with Adrian. As frustrating as some of this work might be, I think that we're really working to change things and have had some real successes. So appreciate your continued work in the area, and I don't know if you have anything that you want to say in order to...
Well, and I'd also like to invite the speakers. Sometimes our speakers have questions for the participants on these calls, so if you have a question you'd like or some feedback you'd like, please feel free to ask, or if you'd like to talk, direct anything to each other as well. And we are still taking questions. People can hit *6 to unmute their line if you want to ask directly.
I actually never gave the website for Farmed Out, so just so people know, it's just farmedout.org, so PHARMEDOUT.org. So.
All right. Did I hear someone else speak up there?
Yeah, this is Doris. I did have a question for anyone who's on the call. in that we wanted to make our, what we haven't done is test our material directly with physicians, and so we would like to hear more information or more about physicians' needs in communicating with patients and whether we can support that communication and that relationship more by either adding materials or doing something different to what we're doing. So if there is any feedback and if there's a way that feedback can come to me, that would be really appreciated.
And again, your email is dpeter@consumer.org.
That's right.
So that's an invitation, folks.
Yeah, and this is Ann again, and I just want to mention, and Becky can probably speak to this better than I can, but my understanding is that MPA, National Physicians Alliance, has been working with Consumer Reports to provide the Best Drugs for Less magazine for free in physicians' offices or medical practices, emergency rooms, et cetera. And, you know, it's a great resource. It talks about a bunch of different classes of drugs, also talks about the advantages to therapeutic of using therapeutic equivalents. And it's a nice counter to some of the advertisement magazines that you see frequently in physician practices and health centers and emergency rooms, like the WebMD magazines, for example. So, Becky, I'm not sure if you're still helping people access those magazines and getting them sent to practices.
Yes, we are. Anybody that is interested in getting a package of Best Buy Drug magazines that they could have in their waiting rooms or exam rooms can contact me, and I will make that arrangement for them. My email address is becky.martin@npalliance.net.
Yeah, this is Doris. We actually just recently updated it and just did a new print run of it, so it has even more information and is even more useful now than the last version. So if you had an older version, you might want to update it and get the update.
Okay. And I do have one more question that just came up. There are many stories about patients asking for or demanding brand name drugs. How willing do patients seem to be to discuss other options, and what is the role of direct-to-consumer advertising? That's like a couple of questions, but is there a way to sort of summarize in the next 2 or 3 minutes?
Well, I will say that even though pharma does spend millions of dollars a year on direct-to-consumer promotion, that they actually see the dollars spent on physicians to be much better spent, because when it comes right down to it, we're the ones with the prescription pad, and if the patient comes in asking for drug A, we can still convince them that they really need to be on drug B. So, you know, we really need to hold the line for rational prescribing and persuade patients that they don't need the drugs that they see on TV, that the best drugs don't need to be advertised.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Well, I think we're going to wrap this up here. Our next conflict-free call will be in approximately 2 months. These are every other month. So watch your email for the date and topic and speaker information. Recordings and notes of past calls, including this one, are archived online at npalliance.org/conflict-free. And again, for more information about MPA and this project, please visit the MPA Unbranded Doctor website at npalliance.org/conflict-free. You should know that by now. We've repeated enough times on this call. For more information on the AMSA Farm-Free Scorecard, which was referenced just a few minutes ago, please visit AMSAScorecard.org. And I think that wraps it up for tonight. Thank you very much, Dr. Peter and Dr. Few Berman. We really appreciate your time with us tonight.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. That's great. Thanks
very much.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.